Today's podcast is the reason why I always chose to become a podcaster. One thing that I knew for sure was this particular road was not going to be easy for me in any way. I was sure that I'm going to face a lot of hardships and a lot of struggle and a lot of obstacles on my way towards success. Today's guest also had a similar type of journey. Richa S. Mukherjee, who started a journey initially by becoming a crime beat journalist and worked with Asian News International Agency and also became an advertiser and eventually became a writer turned author, came on the podcast to share some of the most interesting stories related to her journalism life, her advertising life, and also spoke about her current author life as well. Personally, I really loved hosting Richa ma'am, and the reason is because there was a similarity of facing struggle and hardships and fighting all odds to reach where we want to reach. Honestly, if you are also aspiring to become successful in your life, I bet that you'd want to watch this particular podcast till the end. But for now, let's invite Richa S. Mukherjee on PWK. Watch and learn. Enjoy yourself. Richa Srivastav, ma'am, welcome to the podcast.
I'll just correct you there. It's Richa S. Mukherjee, because if you look for Richa Srivastav, you won't find anyone. And if you look for Richa Mukherjee, you'll find an actress who looks nothing like me.
So, Richa Mukherjee, ma'am, welcome
Richa
to the...
Richa S. Mukherjee.
Richa
yes.
S. Mukherjee, ma'am, yeah, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm good. You look like you've had a long day. But like I was telling you, all your interesting work will pay off. I was going through your earlier sessions. Very interesting and vast range of topics that you've covered.
I never believed that this particular thing will actually grow. We are having 600 subscribers. All of them are genuine. None of them are like, you know, what do you say? Like the fake ones, which YouTube eventually removes. In a bulk. So to be honest, it is very difficult for me as well, because I don't have a the big team like other big podcasters have. I don't have people who would source the guest, who would do everything. So I'm having only 2 to 3 people who are working with me on a profit sharing basis. We are not getting any profit. That's a different thing though. But yeah, I mean, it's quite difficult for me. But yeah, I mean, this particular thing is helping me to reach out to mass and meet amazing people. So yeah, I just love
it. It all starts somewhere, Kunal. I know exactly what you feel like, because when I started out as well, you know, I didn't know anyone. It's not like I was, you know, I thought I was equipped for this career or anything. But you have to start somewhere. And sometimes I just keep on telling people that if you just have the courage to start. And, you know, there's this, like, I don't want to start on a very philosophical note, but I keep reminding myself, there's a very quote I go back to all the time. It's, you know, if you want to dream of new horizons, you have to be courageous enough to lose sight of the shore. Because, you know, if you're always hanging on to something, and sometimes when you just plunge in like you have, it's all good. Dekha jayega. You're just doing your best and it's interesting and it's fun. So it's all good.
Richa ma'am, this is your first time on the show. As for me, I just want you to keep coming on the show, keep promoting your new books on this show.
Sure.
So I would like, I mean, it's actually a request. Would you actually introduce yourself to our audience, because they are seeing you for the first time? They know who Neil Valentine De Silva is, but I want them to know who Richa S. Mukherjee is.
Yes. So this is the hardest part, because authors are meant to have a whole bag of words at all points in time, but ask them to talk about themselves and they'll rely on someone else. I'll try not making this boring. So basically, other than the fact that I have a really long name, I am a storyteller. I have a background in journalism.
Wow.
I was in advertising for the longest time. And then I just happened to become a writer. When I speak to people who write into me about, wanting to publish and just, becoming writers, they always ask me, what was that one moment? What was that time? I have no, inspirational story to tell you that I wanted to write from the time I was in diapers. There's nothing like that. It's just that I've always had a love for words. I read everything. My dad was in the revenue services. So from tax to three elder sisters who read everything from, raunchy Mills and Boons to Georgette Eyre to, my dad who was into the Upanishads and the scriptures. I read everything. And I think that is something that really helped me, prepare myself mentally as a writer. Because sometimes when it's not intentional, whatever you absorb of the world, whatever you read, all of that, was marinating somewhere. Some dish was marinating. And I think the writer in me was marinating. I keep saying that. And then eventually, what I'd like to mention, Kunal, is, you were talking about wanting to do new things and trying new things, without any hope of knowing where you're heading. So I have been a journalist for the longest time. Then I was in advertising for a long time. Before advertising, I did a sidestep because my dad was wondering, ki bhai, karna kya? Journalism and then what? I said, theek hai, I'll do my MBA as well. And he thought I'll go to one of these, corporates. And I called him and I said, I've been picked up by an ad agency. And he said, and why the hell did you waste my money doing an MBA? Ad agency mein jana tha toh. Because, ad agencies don't recruit off campuses. It was very strange that there's this agency called Leo Bennett, who I was with for almost a decade. And they're a US-based agency. There's a very big agency, part of the Publicis Group. So they landed on campus. And, a lot of these decisions, Kunal, were driven by gut. And I can't say that I was, I was done with one career and I was so tired, which is why I went on to the next one. I thoroughly enjoyed myself when I was in journalism. I thoroughly enjoyed myself when I was in advertising. And then when I kind of had a little bit of a break at a point when nobody really has a break, when I took a maternity break, when I didn't know what the hell was happening with my life, that is when I just decided to go ahead and write a book. So I've always been driven by my gut. And I've just tried to enjoy myself along the way and, just respond to what I feel at that moment I need to do. So I went ahead and wrote a book. If you've heard of Ravinder Singh, he's a very popular romance author. And he had a publishing outfit at that point in time, which he was just starting, called Black Ink. And I remember I had written a story for Times of India. There was a contest. I was pretty much writing. I just wrote a book and I shoved it aside because, we all hate the work that we do.
I would interrupt you. I'm sorry I'm interrupting you, but why do you hate your work? I mean, for us, it's lovely. I mean, it's something that, helps us get out of our boredom. So why do you hate your work?
Because, Kunal, we wait for people like you to read it and assure us that what we write is not gibberish. Can I tell you, it is a two-pronged thing. One is, because you're second-guessing what you're writing and you're constantly wondering about whether it'll be liked or not, it is somewhat of a filter, right? Because a lot of times when you're writing, I'm not going to tell you names, but I've come across very, very big names in the industry who write in a very self-indulgent way, right? Ki, ye main hu, ye mera hai. Arey, who the hell is interested? Yeah? The point is you have to write in an evocative manner, like a storyteller, just say people can relate and people enjoy reading it, like you were saying. So it becomes a little bit of a check. That, if you're too self-indulgent, you might end up writing something that's boring someone or somebody that's something that doesn't, somebody doesn't connect with. So, achhi baat hai. Kabhi-kabhi self-critical hona is a good thing because it's a, wo kehte na, checks and measures. It becomes an internal check and measure. The second thing is, whenever it comes to anything creative, and you would know this, Kunal, that when creativity is so subjective, one person is going to love it and the other person is going to trash it, right? So,
I agree.
Yeah, so you're always teetering on the edge ki bhai, aap kis mood mein hai aaj, will you like it or will you hate it, So it's always there. So ye inbuilt mechanism hai of all creative people, I think, which is not a bad thing. It's just that it shouldn't cripple you. So checks and measures are good, but like you're saying, on a daily basis, I work on myself that after, you know, I'm working on the edits of my fifth book right now, three of them are going to screen. I've written so many novellas, and even today, like half an hour ago, I looked at a sentence I'd written and I said, oh my God, this is a bad.
ये थोड़ा सा बेहतर हो सकता था.
Sorry, हाँ, exactly. ये better हो सकता था. So I'm not saying I'm a perfectionist. It's just that I think writers are very needy and suspicious creatures, suspicious of themselves. So it's a learning process. So there will come a time where maybe I come back to your podcast the 10th time and I say, Kunal, I've done it. I love everything I write. I'm on my 20th book, but now's not the time. So I think I'm somewhere in the middle.
You know, apart from the fact that I love horror, but more than horror, there is one thing that I really love. I mean, I'm mad about it. No one in my family is that mad. I love journalism. I mean, and the reason I love journalism is because only journalists have those guts to go into those places, to go into those things. Like, you know, the deeper of the deepest of the deepest things, deepest of the deepest hole, to, you know, extract the truth out of the entire myth or entire rumor. I mean, I love the, I also love crime stories. You know, those Dawood Ibrahim and the entire crime novels and everything. I'm just mad about it. I want to ask you, how was your experience as a journalist? Did you ever come across crime journalism?
So I went into it with big starry eyes. Just
yeah,
like,
really?
I was just like, oh my God. And the first beat, incidentally, I was put on was the crime beat.
Wow.
And I just waited. And I was waiting and waiting and waiting. What I did not realize was, you know, when you're training for at least about a year and a half, what tends to happen is they will send you for sound bites,
uh-huh.
Right? Lawyers coming out of the somewhere from the court, somebody is moving from one place to the other. You are with a cameraman. You're just trying to get the visual and you are trying to get a sound bite. And I had started off my career with this organization called ANI, Asia News. It's a network.
I am a big fan of that.
Yeah. So ANI basically used to supply these sound bites. It was a repository. And basically, agar kisi channel ko nahi mila, they'll call ANI and they'll say, acha humko do. So that's, you know, that's kind of how I started. So the first one, I still remember, what, it was a Telki scam, or I don't know which scam it was. And I remember this guy was coming out and we were waiting for these sound bites. And I got up and I said, this is the first bite of my career, let's go. I told my cameraman, within 5 seconds, I was flat on the ground. There was a stampede. I was like, what the hell is happening? Matlab, there were some 100 people trying to get one sound bite. And usme it doesn't matter whether you are male, female, anywhere in between, a dog, cat. For that bite, people will walk, you know, run all over you. So I was really disillusioned after the first couple of months because I think when you have to stick to the crime beat, it is a very long-term journey where you understand, you know, if you're covering the court. And there are very, very many specialties. If you're covering court, you know, you will basically have to familiarize yourself with the lingo because you're talking to the lawyers, you're understanding the research, you're understanding what happened earlier, what are the different kind of judgments. You know, it depends on what beats you're covering. Sometimes if you're doing investigative reporting, then you have to have a skill of another sort. So you have to stick to it for a while. Initially, because we were, you know, doing different kinds of verticals, I realized that, you know, crime, I would park aside for a bit and watch other people do it because it was a, you know, we had to go through different verticals. Then I was put on entertainment, which I found extremely boring. I mean, sitting and waiting, people love it. Huh? People want to be on the entertainment beat because all you're given is you're given a schedule. Go and sit here. You're going to get 5 minutes with the celebrity at some point in time. You ask your questions. Pure din baith ke khao.
Well, yeah, I mean, initially it is fun. On the longer run.
But I just couldn't find it fun. Exactly. Sitting all day long, you know, sitting and having that oily food. It's not fun for me, you know. I wanted to be in the middle of the action and do interesting things. So I think I let go of the journalism beat as well very quickly. Where, interestingly, Kunal, I found a lot of interest was the business beat, you know, where there were soft business stories, which was allowing me to meet the who's who of the, you know, business world. You get your press kit, you know, you get all the information, you update yourself, and then you ask all the intelligent questions you want, right? So I think even while I was, like I said, everything has contributed to me being a writer. So I think this is a very, very important skill that I acquired when I was a journalist, that of being an empath, being able to be in multiple shoes, understand what somebody could possibly be thinking about, already thinking of a counter question, you know, just understanding people. It gives you a lot when you're sitting in that chair and when you're looking at someone and you're asking questions, it gives you a lot of, I guess, fodder about human behavior. So I think that, whether it was across fields, and I think I need to put it in some book as well, because there were a lot of funny experiences. But yeah, I think that also, that entire phase of my life also contributed towards my being a writer, even though I didn't stick to the crime beat for too long. I turned to books.
You know, I don't know why, but I actually forgot the name of the person. She was a lady. She is a lady who had interviewed Dawood Ibrahim. I mean, she was the only person who had interviewed him in the whole world, to be honest. And after that, we did not see any such, you know, proper criminal reporting news coming out. I want to ask you, like, you know, was there any scary part linked to your work? I mean, I'm not sure. I just want to know. Because the reason I'm asking you is because those TV series have, you know, hyped it a lot.
Also, there's
I just want to know the real.
Came out and, you know, they highlighted the true story of the lady who was behind that expose, behind Chota Rajan and all of that.
Expose the series, I mean, the series name is, I'm not sure.
Yeah. So, like I said, I wasn't on the beat for too long. But what was scary, I still remember I was at a party and there was a bomb blast that had happened, you know, in another city at that point of time. And we were all at the, you know, editor's house and it was being considered who to send. So my first reaction was obviously, you know, my hand would shoot up. But at that point in time, which essentially meant that I would have to take a flight in another 2 hours, explain to my father, who used to come back from his income tax office at 6 o'clock, why I needed to take a flight at 8 in the, you know, like maybe 4 in the morning, and go off into an area which had, you know, just there was a criminal activity and there was a bomb blast, and go and investigate. So, I mean, and this has nothing to do with the fact that whether it's a girl or boy, it's just that there are so many considerations, right? So there's adrenaline. Then on top of that, there are all these rational considerations. Are you stupid? Like, what are you doing? You know, first understand what you're doing. So I remember at that point in time, some other girl was chosen over me. But I didn't know whether I was happy or I was sad, because my first response was, I want to go, you know, send me in. But somewhere at the back of my head, I was thinking, look, I'm not entirely prepared. So let me understand what is going on first. So, you know, there's journalism. I always found there's always this tussle between, and you'll hear that across from reporters, no matter how senior or junior, is that, you know, there's always this tussle between instinct and practicality. You know, you're always trying to figure out what is right, what is wrong, and that tussle continues irrespective of what you're covering, who you're covering, where you have to go. So yeah, there were some scary situations, but like I said, I was stayed on it for about 6 to 7 months, collected a lot of sound bites, made a lot of rounds of the courtroom, and then decided I needed to move around a little.
So like, now this was the end of the journalism topic. I want to, you know, proceed further to the main novel part. What was your first book, and what was your experience after, you know, it got published?
So the reason I was connecting to what you were saying earlier was, I know what it feels like being an outsider. And, you know, I think a lot of people, I'm taking a sidestep, I'll come to my book. A lot of people poo-poo people like Chetan Bhagat, right? A lot of the people who initially read Chetan Bhagat in droves and in millions, somehow, you know, when you mature in your choices in literature, you tend to poo-poo, you know, the people you entered, you know, this whole concept of reading with. But I'm not going to comment on what kind of a writer he is. I will only comment and congratulate him on the fact that he opened the doors for many Indians who write. Initially, if you remember, Kunal, it was just about, you know, West is best. irrespective of, you know, it was not, it didn't just stop at, you know, jo aunties used to come getting all these, you know, chacha chachis used to come getting perfumes and, you know, all the best things, then go clinique ke chote chote things from the shopping online and, you know, me on in the air and the aircraft and duty free and all. For us, it is literature has always been about best is best. Because we weren't giving a lot of, you know, regional literature, mein, it was very rich. There was a lot in regional literature as well, but it wasn't actually reaching many homes. Because yahi tha ki, when it comes to writing in English, it is all about what we've been given from outside. Vahi paro. What he did was he opened up to, you know, the doors to people like me. And many of us, because that is when publishers started getting convinced about the fact that, look, Indians bhi likh rahe hain, not just the classic literature jo Indians likhte hain, but contemporary fiction maybe, thrillers maybe, there are many genres across where Indians are also writing well, and that actually opened up. So for me to come in, you know, at the end of possibly my second career and to think that I can publish with HarperCollins and, you know, have 5 books out in 5 years, it was a dream, right? I was standing exactly where you are. I mean, you look at all these big podcasters and influencers, you're like, oh my, you know, just look at them and look at the numbers and they have, and yeah, look at the subscription, look at the money coming in. I was doing just that. He, my God, I still remember when I went into this, Times of India contest, which I had won. I came in the top 10, where that's where I met Ravinder Singh. And I had written this book called, which later, I mean, my first book was called I Didn't Expect to Be Expecting. So, yeah, so I had won this contest for the top 10 for Ravinder Singh. And I had written this book called I Didn't Expect to Be Expecting, which was about accidental pregnancy. Because I was, it was contextual for me. And I wrote a humorous take on it. So I had it ready. But obviously, I, like I told you, I shoved it under some diaper somewhere. And I said, I don't want to publish it. God knows who will buy it. So then I remember sitting in that room, Kunal, and there was this AV going on, and it was by this, you know, this Times of India, that initiative that I was talking about. And everybody was there, you know, Anita Nair and the Amish Tripathi and Ravinder Singh, Joy Datta, Ashwin
Sahi. These are some big names, you know.
Exactly. So they were all sitting on the stage there, and Jaishi Mishra, and there were so many others I admire. And I remember feeling this surge of energy that, oh my God. You know, you sometimes want something so bad that you can just taste it. And I remember sitting in that room and just wanting it so bad. So I think I wasn't planning to, but I went up to Ravinder and I just said that, look, it must be the worst elevator pitch possible. But I cringed and I went to him and I said, look, I have a book. It's ready. Can I please send it to you? Would you take a look? So obviously I did send it to him. And he took about 3-4 months, but then he called back. First, he pretended that, I'm sorry, you know, thanks for sending it, but it didn't happen. So my heart became this small. And then I said, yeah, who am I kidding? Of course, I knew it wouldn't happen. And then he said, would you mind if HarperCollins comes on board? And I remember I jumped up and down for about maybe 10 minutes. I couldn't say anything because I was just so darn excited and so shocked. And yeah, so that's the journey of my first book, because it was very contextual for me. I had a lot of fun writing it. So I wasn't actually thinking of, you know, how they say, always think of your reader, who is your main reader and who are you targeting and who is this marketed for? But the first time I wrote it, it was such a pleasure writing it. I might not have written it with the best techniques, which is why my editor suffered a lot with editing, because I wrote some 200,000 words. And just to give you an idea, a typical contemporary fiction book will be about, say, 200 rupees, which means it will come down to about 60,000 to 70,000 words at best. So there's an economics to everything. And I went and gave her 3 books instead of giving her one, under the guise of one. So, but it was such a pleasure writing it that I realized that, you know, this is something I really want to do. And immediately after that, I think people expected a similar kind of book for me. So that did really well. And, you know, that also was picked up, the rights were picked up by someone. But at that point in time, people thought I would continue writing, you know, in this contemporary fiction, drama, humor. But I think I like surprising myself and I like challenging myself, just like I have throughout my career. And I decided that because I love thrillers, I love horror as well, all of this was playing in my head. So I said, is there something that, you know, I can try and do differently? So that is where Kanpur Khufiya Private Limited came up, which is a story about this, you know, desi detective. First time you talk about detectives in our head, we all think of Perry Mason and Arthur Conan Doyle and, you know, cigars and top hats and, you know.
Only Sherlock Holmes, student in B Baker Street.
and cobbled streets and, you know, fog and carriages and all. So this is the imagery that comes to mind. And then I was like, you know what? I want to make a Desi detective on the lines of maybe a Byomkesh Bakshi, you know, who was...
Yeah, I was going to mention him.
Yes. So he was a favorite of mine, Sharadendra Bandyopadhyay. He was, and what I loved about him, you know, he was so cheeky, like so undetective and so uncanny. Matlab dhoti pehen ke against establishment, against the British, doing his own thing. So I loved the cheekiness of that character, you know.
Do you,
so
somehow, I'm going to interrupt you again.
Yeah, sure.
But... what do you think? Late Sushant Singh Rajput did justice to Detective Byomkesh Bakshi? I mean, as for me, he was wonderful. As a person, as a character, the everything, right from the dressing part to the dialect and everything. But according to you, because I believe, you know, writers have that special knack of understanding something better than the people who are not writers. So, like, I want to know your opinion on that.
So, I'm a little biased here because off the cuff, I will always tell you that I prefer books over, even though I hugely consume movies. I'm a movie buff. Like, I've made my 9-year-old daughter from the time she was, I think, 3 years old, we've both been going to the theater. So, I'm a major movie buff. But having said that, I genuinely believe that somehow, whenever you're reading a book, it allows for so much of, you know, creativity and imagination and just reconstructing whatever the writer has written, right? So there are many great adaptations of books. I genuinely always prefer the books because they leave so much to the imagination. But having said that, I have always been a huge fan of Sushant Singh Rajput, and I think he did a spectacular job in terms of, you know, those picking up those nuances and just generally, you know, because Byomkesh Bakshi in my head was always this understated guy, you know, who's always, he's not OTT, he's not, you know, he's always understated and, you know, Sumri mein he does all his work and, you know, gets all his informants and this, that and the other. I think he portrayed that in a very subtle and nice way. So I don't know if it was the director's vision or whatever it is, but I think he genuinely brought it to life for me. I don't remember being disappointed when I watched the movie. Of course, I mean, I will always prefer the books, but yeah, he did a fantastic job for sure.
So, like, before jumping on to the Kuldhara part, the reason is completely, you know, relatable, because I want to know the exact story of what had happened at Kuldhara, because I'm quite confused with the Bhangad Fort story, and to be honest, even Dudarturam is also confusing us. So before jumping on to that part, I want to ask, like, what was the most difficult part of your, you know, author, becoming an author journey?
So, I think the difficult part is actually constantly being on, Kunal. I think for a person like me who's, so I think I'm very gregarious. But I, you know, what is that term the people use nowadays? Ambivert, right?
Yeah.
Which is like, matlab, I can be completely social and I actually seek that as well. But there's a big part of me that wants to be in one corner, avoid. If I know someone, I'll move the other way. If I see a call coming, I'll prefer them messaging you. I'm like that as well. So there's two kinds of people within me. And what I did not realize while, you know, getting into this profession was that you constantly have to be on. All the time, right? So writing eventually becomes a small part of it and you become a public persona more than a writer. So while there are parts of it that I really enjoy, I mean, of course, I mean, the fact that because I chose this profession, I was standing on a TEDx stage earlier this year, and the fact that I get to meet so many wonderful people, you know, interesting people like you, I get to go for book signings and Lit Fest, all of that is wonderful. But for a person like me, it's very exhausting to constantly be on. I'm not the kind of person, you know, I marvel at it. I know I have author friends who can walk into a room, you know, they can enter this conversation and within 5 seconds, the entire conversation is going to be about their book, what they're doing, what they're this and that and all, you know, just on the ball. I can't do that. And I have huge respect for people who are good at marketing themselves. So I am learning as I go, but I genuinely find it very exhausting ki you know, the publisher will help you when the book is released and for events and this, that, and the other. But your marketing and branding cap always has to be on. Like constantly you're ready for, you know, baat karo, you know, put your book in, slide it in somewhere. You just have to constantly present yourself as a brand all the time. And that is important because purists will poo-poo at me saying that, "Arey, you're a writer. You don't sound like you have a soul of a writer. Ye bechna and marketing, why does this?" It is important. I'm not a purist, but I'm a realist as well. So while I love writing, what I do know is that if I want to be a writer of some consequence, I have to keep myself visible. I have to create a brand out of myself. So both of them and doing them at full steam sometimes really exhausts me. And I didn't realize this is what you have to do all the time.
Now let's jump in on to the horror part. the second most favorite genre of both of us.
Yes.
So like, I want to know the entire story behind Working, The Curse of Kultara. I mean, how did you come up with the story?
So, Dego bhai, I am no expert. I also have read everything and researched whatever I had to. But can I tell you that somehow, you know, there are top five. Whenever you think about, you know, haunted places in India and everything, there are these top five things that always come. And I know Barngarh is also very famous. And there are these mills in Mukesh Mills in Bombay. Thinking of these setups in Bombay. But somehow, you know, I always gravitate towards, you know, these small towns and, you know, bahut charm hai. There's so much, you know, that you can talk about the landscape and the people and all of that. So most of my books, if you see, except one book that I wrote called Excess Baggage, which was a story about a mother and daughter who take to Europe, not even a small town in India, but they directly go to Europe. So that's the one that's being made into a movie. So other than that, most of my other books are set in small towns and all over India. So that choice was clear. So then my Bombay list went out. I knew that I wanted to use the paranormal as a context, right? Because after maybe the 500, 600 movies or OTTs and books, so maybe 900 books that I must have consumed. And this is something I have in common with Neil, that Edgar Allan Poe is one of our earliest favorites, you know, who got us hooked onto horror. So right from that time, I think I've been fascinated, and I knew that some book of mine will definitely have horror weaved in. So because I wanted to use, because there is a mystery, there is a murder, all of that, you know, those tropes have to continue. But because I wanted a horror as a context, I had to choose. And from my previous research and my genuine interest in Kuldhara, somehow this curse of Kuldhara always, and I remember seeing this one, if you remember, there were these paranormal investigators. Now I know the Paranormal Pair Society and many others have gone and investigated over there, and there's a lot more material. But I remember seeing a documentary a long time ago and reading a book about Kuldhara. And there were one of the reasons that guy got on hooked is because, like you said, there are so many theories. And the reason I love stories from the past and curses and relics is because they're so open to interpretation, right? Ek ne kuch bola, wahan pe khade hue jo chacha hai, unhone kuch aur bola. Some tourists who went there at night said something else. Somebody who went in the morning said something else. And some firang came and said, "Oh my God, this is all Indian superstitions, it's nothing." So because there were so many conflicting reports, I think that is something that made it even more interesting, because I would be able to fictionalize it and, you know, use it to my own advantage. So that is the reason I kind of chose it. I was a little scared because when you take something which is historical / fictional, you are still having to choose which side of the fact you want to focus on. So I picked and chose the one that made sense to me with respect to my story. So one of the versions, obviously, is I took the most popular version. Obviously, in the story, if you read the book, you will find out that there are one or two people who try and question, is this version the right version or not? So I've set it up as a debate, but the one I chose to focus on was the fact that jo most popular wala hai, wherein there was this landlord out there at that point in time, and you know, the Paliwal Brahmins were around, and they were a very peace loving, very wealthy community. And there was this one of the very wealthy farmers, unki jo beti thi, that is, you know, this guy wanted to marry her and had his
own. That's what I'm sorry I'm interrupting you, but that's it. I mean, the Bhandar story is also quite similar. That's the reason I'm left clueless. I'm like, dude, what is the story of Bhandar? And if this is the story of Bhandar, then what is the story of Tuldhara? I mean, what's going on?
Nee, Bhandar mein, I've heard conflicting reports that, for example, there are so many things that have happened within the fort. I have actually heard multiple versions of not the original story, but the fact that, but uske baad kya hua hai. Bhandar, I think, has caught more of people's imagination because of all the things that have been happening to people once you spend the night there, because a lot of people have tried that. So, waha se, you know, that rahasya has started. If you remember, I don't even know if you were you watched DD at that point in time, but there used to be this thing called Kile ka Rahasya, which used to come on Doordarshan a long time ago, which was about a fort where you are not supposed to go after midnight. And once you go in there, jo bhi jata tha, uske peet pe, there used to be, and this was based on a true story, that there would be a stamp of a hand. And once you're stamped, and this is something I've used in Curse of Kuldhara, there's a stamp there, so I got inspired by that. So once you have a stamp on your hand, means you're marked. So pehle, you know, there's this farmer who said, wo kiske bheed bakri andar chale jaate hain, they're also stamped. Then people go inside, they're also stamped. And then they die within a certain amount of time. So I think Bhandar mein more, it's more of the fascination comes from the fact the sources, the original story might be questionable, but I think the interest comes from the fact that so many people have gone and spent a night and unke saath kya kya hua hai. I think Bhandar ka fascination comes from there. Hmm. Whereas Kuldhara, you will not hear too much about people disappearing or things happening. It is just that the source story itself is so interesting because it is based on the fact that how is it that possibly 2,000 to 2,500 people overnight with their guy, bear, you know, bistar.
Yeah, I mean, they say stuff. On Doodlethrom, I'm a travel tourism student and we were actually studying the Rajasthan itinerary, okay? And while studying the Rajasthan itinerary, we came across Kuldhara. Okay, and while I studied, our teacher asked us to search the story of Kuldhara, like what had exactly happened. I knew because I am a horror fan and I was able to answer faster than any other student could. So after studying that, I got a bit confused because I was, I was actually thinking the story of Kuldhara as the story of Bhandar. But now that you have come on the show and you actually, rectified everything and clarified which story and everything.
Yeah, because I think in the book itself, you know, I have situated wherever the shoot is happening. So the entire story is that, you know, Prachand and his funny family, some members who are in Kanpur, the original story is in Kanpur. That's what Kanpur Kutia Travel Limited is. They get an invitation from this guy to come and shoot, oversee a shoot which is happening on their life. So they're very excited that, you know, ab hum famous ho gaye hain, hamare upar ek, you know, ek movie ban rahi hai and all of that. So little do they know that koi ulterior motive chal raha hai wahan pe, and they are taken to the sets, and the set is just behind the, just in front of the ruins of Kuldhara. That is where they're shooting. So there are many times where I have taken the entire, there's such a fantastic backdrop. So many of my sequences all lead to the ruins. Like I couldn't keep away while writing. So whether it's the, you know, whether it's the actual murder scene or whether it's the discoveries or the murder being, the mystery being revealed, you know, asking more questions and confusing people even more about what happened in Kuldhara. All of that happens, you know, in the ruins where, you know, they end up meeting someone who says he knows more. And then somebody gives them a contrary point of view. And what I did was I spoke to a lot of people from Jaisalmer who have their own version. And then this guy told me about story jo bhi ho, this is the stuff that we do when we pass by. So I found out, you know, just locally, wo jo kabhi pata nahi chalega, you know, they call Hanumanji some electricity wale baba or something, you know, there's so many weird names that they have for the local deities and all of that. And he's like, hum ye pura, you know, ye kya bolte hain wo, usko, to ward off the evil, this is what we do, ye pujaen karte and all of that. So I spoke very extensively with, you know, people who, you know, some three people who were from Jaisalmer. So I've tried to include all of these, you know, chota chota rituals, beliefs, because the locals have their own point of view of jo bahar se log aate. That's another thing. They feel like jo story hai, wo story hai. Tum chhod do na. You're coming and smoking it all the time. They don't look at it as tourism and all of that. They're actually irritated. The people I spoke with, they were saying, why are you stoking, you know, the embers? वहां पे कोई होटल वोटल कुछ हो तो सकता नहीं है. जस्ट लेट द यू नो लाइंग डॉग्स लाई, जो है वो है. डोंट कम एंड इरिटेट बिकॉज दे बिलीव इन स्पिरिट्स, दे बिलीव इन एंसेस्टर्स एंड देयर सेइंग. वो लोग ऑलरेडी परेशान हो चुके हैं, वो लोग को जाना पड़ा ओवरनाइट, गॉड नोज. एंड बिकॉज द थ्योरी इज दैट इट देयर मिजरी डिडंट जस्ट एंड देयर आफ्टर दैट. दिस इज ऑल्सो समथिंग आई हैव एक्सप्लोर्ड इन द बुक की दे वेंट अहेड एंड दे डाइड और अंडर वेरी पिटिएबल सर्कमस्टांसेस, फैमिन. And itni badi population, when they're moving to another place altogether, it's not like they'll just overnight find a place which has water, which has shelter and all of that, right? So aage jaake they disperse. That is the theory. That is what I was researching. That many people believe that they died horrible deaths. Like some of their lineage ka aage people were still continued the tradition, but a lot of people died because of famine and a lot of horrible conditions, you know, diseases, famine and all of that. So it's very sad. So for them, it's like, they were our ancestors and we don't want, you know, them to be troubled more than they already have been troubled. So there are all these contrasting points of view which I have kind of filled the book with, which made it very interesting for me to write as well.
So like, what was your experience while writing horror? And the reason I'm asking is because this is the same question I had asked Neil sir. And he actually shared with me some of the most, you know, paranormal activities he had been a part of. Like, he actually told me that once he was in a hotel room and while writing on the novel, he saw a shadow. At that particular moment, I had got goosebumps. So, like, I want to know about you.
No, so, I think something that immediately, you know, what tends to happen is when you're writing something, you, even if you love something and if you've always enjoyed reading it, doesn't necessarily mean you are equipped enough to write it. So if I tend to surround myself with those kind of stimulus at that point in time, right? So I still remember that I was having a conversation with friends of mine. And I think one of my friends would, maybe if he sees this episode later, he'll be upset with me, but I'm just going to hint at the fact that he is somebody who is into auto writing. He's one of my closest friends. And I have seen him for maybe 25, 30 years. And we've always known that he is connected. He's always been different. He's always had a way of looking at life. He's always had a certain pace at which he lives his life. And we all know, like when he told us eventually, we all understood why. Is because he doesn't, it's not just that he is in this realm. He is in, you know, it's, his consciousness is taking on messages from here and there, which is why I remember having conversations with him when my mom passed away. And he actually conveyed a message to me. And I remember at that time I was just poo-pooing it, saying, you know, what the hell. But later on, I remember just before we wrote the book, just maybe a couple of months before that, we had this conversation. And I spoke to him, another very close friend of ours, of, you know, who has this friend in common. And he told me about this experience where he happened to see a woman when this friend of mine was staying over at his place. And when he asked him in the morning, there was this lady in black with like hair and stuff like that. And when he asked him in the morning over tea, over breakfast, he casually said, yeah, she's always with me. So at that point in time, and he was like, okay, my children were in the house. My wife was in the house. And I saw her. She was outside his room. I saw her. And then he very casually, he just said, she's always around. I'm used to her. So I remember this one stuck out in my head.
You saw her?
Yeah. I mean, my friend saw her.
Okay.
So he said that this friend I'm talking about stayed with this other common friend of ours. And when he asked him in the morning, he just said that, don't worry about it. She won't do anything. She's always with me. She's always around. So then after that, obviously my other friend couldn't sleep at night because every time he wanted to go to the washroom, this lady would be intercepting. And one thing I also remember, I very clearly remember while I was writing the book, and this was during the pandemic that I was trying to finish off the last bits of it when I was like really frustrated. My puppy, she only barks when she sees somebody. That's it. She's a Shih Tzu. and she rarely ever interacts. You'll never hear any or squeak out of her. And I remember we were sitting in the room and watching something. There was this, now I remember, there was this one movie that we were trying to watch, a horror movie, for 4 nights in a row. The first night, something unfortunate happened to somebody who works in my house. The second night, something, you know, my dad slipped or something. The third night, you know, there were these weird things happening while we were trying to watch that movie. So the fourth night, I still remember my husband just said that, you know, maybe this is some Panvati or something. Can we not watch this horror movie? Let's just shut it, you know. So then I said, you know, please don't think about such things. Let's just go ahead. 10 minutes of starting to watch that. And then suddenly I remember my dog just stood up and she started looking at the main door and started growling. She growled and her body, you know, I touched her body like this. It was ramrod straight. Like it was as if her body was frozen. She just kept looking and growling, growling. You know, that menacing thing that dogs only do when you see. And I know her, right? I know exactly how she is. So she kept growling, growling, growling. We couldn't get her to straighten up. Then she started getting cold. Like she was stiff and cold. And she kept growling. Then we switched off the movie. We said, something is happening. We went with her outside. There was this one spot which she kept on looking up like that. And she kept circling, 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 circling. And she was barking her head off. It was as if she was following something. Then she finally followed that thing and stopped outside my dad's door where he'd fallen just a day before. So he stopped outside my dad's door and she was sniffing and she was pawing and she was crying, trying to go in. When we let her inside, she just kept looking at my dad and his bed where he was lying down. And she kept looking and barking, barking like somebody was standing there. So I and that, after that took me a while. And she was like that for a very long time. And then I remember she was a little ill also after that. So, you know, they say sometimes in the presence, and that's when I remembered, there was this gentleman who used to take out our, you know, our, what do you call that? The patri that you do, the Janam patri thing. And he used to do all these
dhomli thing.
Yeah, there was this one guy my dad really used to. He was a very, you know, he wasn't like one of those dhomi babas or anything. You just
every family has one. Okay, every family. Yeah, yeah. Even my family also.
Yeah. So he really believed in him and he used to just have conversations. He was not like any one of those pretentious people. And he had said that at any point in time in a given room, and my sisters hate me because every time we're alone and we're in a spooky place, I always remind them that at any given point in time in a room, there are always 3 to 4 entities around. You will just not know. Any given point in time, wherever you are. So once you switch off the lights and where you're sitting, please don't be surprised if there are 4 people behind you listening to your podcast.
What the fuck?
I'm telling you, when he said, I have it on authority, like, trust me.
Okay, I'm safe because the room I'm sitting, I'm having a little small temple over here.
Okay, very good. Then you're safe. Yeah, so that's what. So all of these things keep
this
happening.
This was very scary. You know, yeah. My audience is gonna get scared.
I have many more, but for that, I'll have to write another horror book and we'll have to.
I've got the perfect real content then.
Yes, I mean, so that's what they say, right? If we think that we know everything about this world, then that is absolute arrogance on our part and it's an absolute waste of space. How can we just assume that sab hum hi hai, this is just us? So which is why even as a writer, even as a person, I always allow for a certain scope of possibilities, right? Because possibilities hai to imagination hai to creativity hai to storytelling hai, right? So you have to allow yourself and not be rigid as a writer. You know, you always have to know and believe that there's stuff I don't know. And, you know, I mean, it's always interesting to explore.
Has it ever happened like you have had, you know, nightmares while writing or watching on the horror stuff?
I have, and I am very impressionable like that. Whatever I see at night before I go to sleep translates into my, in my dreams as well. So, I know Neil has some very horrible nightmares he's told me about.
We also spoke about, sleep paralysis.
Sleep paralysis.
I shared my horrible experience. He shared his. So yeah.
Yeah. So there have been times when I remember, you know, losing some people, which I don't want to talk about in a horrible way. And then seeing it all happen in a very, very bad way. And, you know, sometimes it's so real that I have woken up with, you know, with my heartbeat going, you know, 19 a dozen, I mean, like a crazy heartbeat and crying. I felt it like so minutely that I have woken up crying and sobbing in my sleep. So I have had nightmares. I don't have very regular. I also have had funny horror nightmares. I remember, I always remember this one really idiotic nightmare. Maybe that's also why I write comedically, even if I write horror or thrillers, because I always have a parallel track of humor going on in my head. I still remember I had this dream where I was lost in some, you know, those Purana Mahals, kind of, you know, one of those places. And I'm lost. I know I'm there with my family. I can't find them. And I'm just roaming around and I'm lost and I'm getting really anxious and I'm trying to locate someone. And finally, outside the gates, I find that all of them are sitting there and having a picnic with a tiger. And they have landed in that thick patch of forest in a plane. And they're all sitting there and having a picnic. And there's a tiger there and he's eating with them as well. And I always think back to that dream and I think that, what the hell, you know, goes on in my head? Like, where is the logic? Where is, I mean,
exactly. I was going to ask you, like, you know, the Basti language. To sense is baat ki?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I asked myself that repeatedly. So I have some very bizarre dreams as well. But yeah, the not sleep paralysis, but and I know that you know, we always tend to ascribe all our nightmares to the paranormal. But what I also know, because of certain experiences that my, you know, people in my family have had, that sometimes your mental state of mind also will translate into horrendous nightmares, terrible nightmares. You know, so it isn't always just the paranormal. I think sometimes we have the capacity and our own problems and our mental state has the power to haunt us. So a lot of it comes from there as well. And this is what some people have kind of found out. And now that you speak about horror, we'll definitely have to do another podcast, because there's,
yeah,
suddenly
exactly.
I remembered about so many instances where my state was also went and
had,
yeah,
we want part two.
So I will note them down for the next one.
So, you know, I want to ask you like few of the last questions of the entire podcast, that, you know, this is just a normal observatory question, that why doesn't India have many, like, you know, many horror novel authors out there? I mean, why aren't authors working on horror genre? Why are they working on love stories or fictional stories? Why aren't they working on real horror stories?
You know,
real
Kunal,
horror as in, you know, not completely real, but somewhat real.
Can I tell you, this is all cyclical.
Okay.
It is all cyclical because the same problem that I was stating earlier about the fact that we always looked, you know, westwards for a lot. Now, if only every trend in the West would come to India as well, because can I tell you, in terms of numbers, thrillers and horror are one of, see, universally, there are certain things that we cannot change. Romance is the best-selling genre year on year for decades. You can't change that. Romance, love makes the world go round, literally, even in literature, right? So, uska koi contest nahi hai. You know, romance sells everywhere, internationally, India, everywhere. But when it comes to the other categories, it depends. You know, that evolution of a certain genre in every country is different. Jab hum log kya, it was always used to be either, you know, what is coming down from literary circles, because awards, the ones that are winning the awards will come down to India. Or it would be the Indian writers, like maybe a Jhumpa Lahiri or a Chitra B. Devakarni, you know, all these, or a Manu Joseph. These are people who are writing about the Indian diaspora abroad. So again, they would be ratified and loved abroad and then they would come. But dheere dheere karke, like I was telling you, contemporary fiction ke doors khule, phir mythology ka khula, phir, you know, historical and periodic fiction, that opened up. Then dheere dheere karke, thrillers opened up. Then horror opened up, right? So it was all sequentially. When the market starts opening up, when people understand, there were a lot of people who went ahead and self-published horror. And when the publishers realized, this happens a lot, they went and, you know, there are these indie publishers, right, who go ahead and independently publish. Then they got the attention of the publishers when they realized that, are, online, this guy has such a big audience, this woman has such a big audience, why don't I go and actually utilize this and bring them under my banner? So that is what dheere dheere karke started happening with horror. To answer your question about why people are not reading, I can always say that I have the same problem even with thrillers. In fact, I wrote a long analysis last year, you know, earlier last year, for The Hindu. And they had asked me to analyze why doesn't crime fiction sell in India. So I had gone back to the Britishers' times and all of that to figure out kya hai, kyun hai, why is it that? So there are many theories, but I personally believe that everything is cyclical. Abhi dheere dheere karke the appetite of, you know, people in terms of consuming stories. Now, another thing people keep saying is, you know, books are dead. Books are not dead. They can never be dead. The format is changing. People are consuming them in shorter formats. They're consuming them in audiobooks. They're consuming them in terms of various kinds of content, right? So storytelling and content is not going to die. It's just that the formats are changing. And I think even with books, I think it's cyclical. There were so many bookshops that shut down during the pandemic. And now there are these absolutely fantastic chains coming up. Independent chains that are coming up, like Kunzum, and there's a huge one in Salt Lake City in Cal called Story. You know, who would have thought of bookstores as destination when they're struggling, right? So I feel that, you know, we just have to write the stories that we believe in and the genres that we believe in, and they'll just find a way. They'll find their readers, they'll find their publishers. And Neil, is it a good space right now? Because initially, where, you know, horror wouldn't appear, you know, in, and I understand this because I tend to write humorously, right? So when I go to Litfest, people get confused. Isko contemporary fiction ke panel mein dale, ya isko horror ke panel mein dale, ya isko humor ke panel mein dale, right? It's when you're doing interesting new things, it confuses people. But it's a good place to be, you know, when it comes to writing, because if you're making, and I also think I have, even horror, even thrillers have the OTT space to thank for it. Because yeah. Suddenly, even if your books are not selling, because can I tell you, royalties come like this, peanuts. Then even if your books are not selling, you know, you have a lucrative medium, and that is your OTT is selling for movies, because three of my books are headed to screen. And could I have sustained myself as a writer if I was just depending on royalties? Absolutely not. Because now I'm doing this full time and I can't be romantic about it. Oh, I write books and then I disappear. Where's the money? Right? So I think a lot of this content that's being created are also consuming a lot of books. Like, you come across, again, anecdotal evidence, but if you look at most of the popular series or shows right now, they're all based on books. And it makes me very happy. Initially, I was, you know, there was hearing an interview of a filmmaker, and he was saying that initially, from the times of Kati Patang and all of that, there were a lot of books and articles that a lot of movies were based on, you know, short stories. But then uske baad somehow the trend went, and then it became more formulaic. But that trend is coming back. There's a huge number of, you know, writers who have sold their rights, and a lot of these stories are coming up. And then that is, like I said, it's cyclical. You know, the books feed into the content are feeding into books. So it's a good time to write, whether it's thrillers, horror, you know, whatever it is that you believe in. Just it's a good time for telling stories. And I believe that it'll all come around and it'll create a market.
It was so, so, so lovely interacting with you, Richa ma'am. Honestly, this has been one of my, you know, the only, sometimes, you know, as a podcaster, what I believe is I myself, you know, sometimes get bored if the guest is not taking, you know, equal participation, you know, only answering the questions and that's it. Are,
you'll have no such problem with me. I have been told I talk too much. So that has always been a concern. So yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, see, my audience is really one of the most loveliest people I've got. Okay. And believe me, they love each and every podcast equally. And they love horror ones. Right. You know, I have a separate bunch of people who actually love horror. And they want me to bring more of horror stuff. But as I mentioned earlier, as a podcaster, it becomes some difficult for me also to, you know, strap out the horror genre, the perfect person who would share the horror stuff and who would actually, you know, be ready to come on the show. Some are not, some, you know, reply that okay, we'll do that, and they do not show up. So yeah, that's kind of heartbreaking. But thank you to you, ma'am, for sparing our time. It means a lot, and I'm definitely looking out for part two. And it's a special request. Can we do the second part in Hindi so that it reaches the masses?
Sure.
Because in English, as you can see, that there are only a bunch of people this particular podcast might reach. I mean, the response might be the same and might not be the same, but in the case of here, the other language, that is Hindi, it will definitely reach out to the masses.
Absolutely. I'm from Kanpur. My Hindi is as good as my English. So it's all good. Yeah. So if your audience is loving horror, I hope they read The Curse of Kuldhara and Kanpur Khufiya, and both of them are headed to screen as web series. So ek bar wo release
I'm waiting for it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the first person who would actually sit with my mom and I'll say, yeah, I hosted on my podcast. Yeah. I'll flex a bit. So thank you so much, ma'am, for coming on the show.
And thank you so much for having me, and we'll chat again, Kunal. All the very best.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you so much. Thank you.
So this was Richais Mukherjee, who had started a career as a crime beat journalist with Asian News International Agency, then worked as an advertiser, and now is a full-time writer turned author. She came on the podcast and shared some of the really amazing and valuable facts of life, and also shared her life journey as well. I believe you must have enjoyed and learned a lot of things that you have never learned before. If you loved this podcast, please do let us know in the comment section. And do subscribe our channel for witnessing such amazing, unheard and never seen before podcast. Team Kunal Kulkarni and Team PWK will be back with such amazing stories. But till then, keep supporting and keep loving. Enjoy yourself. Love you guys. Namaste.